Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth every Tuesday at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and on Voice of Vashon at your convenience. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and most grateful for your ears this afternoon. Today, we're going to talk about how the news is abuzz with reports of gerrymandering and redistricting, what it means for voting rights for our democracy. What are these processes? Are they different? How do they work? And what can we as individuals do about it? To help us stretch our brains around these concepts, I've invited Vashon Island resident Paul Query, who publishes the New Washington Observer, an independent newsletter on politics, government, and the influence thereof in Washington State. After 20 years as a reporter and editor for the Associated Press, Paul left journalism to spend nearly a decade as a strategic communications consultant. The insider knowledge he gained from that work informs his work on The Observer, which you can find at washingtonobserver.substack.com. That's washingtonobserver.substack.com. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you so much, Susan. Happy to be with you.
It's really nice to have you. You're kind of a new discovery for me, so it's a delight that you were so willing to come and join us today.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying The Observer.
Yeah, I am. Let's start with a look at The Observer. Why did you start it, and what's your point?
I covered politics in three or four different states during my career with the AP, and then I worked in and around politics as a consultant for close to 10 years. And during that time, I had access to a lot of information that most reporters don't have access to, which really kind of gave me the idea for The Observer, which is to find the stories that live in money and influence surrounding politics and government in Washington State. And because I know I can look at, you know, the reports that are provided to the Public Disclosure Commission by campaigns and lobbyists, because I know who a lot of the people are who are getting paid in these circumstances and what they do, that allows me to find stories where other folks would not necessarily be able to do that. And so that's what The Observer's about. And you know, right now it's campaign season in the odd-numbered year, so I'm focusing on politics at the King County level and at the City of Seattle level and elsewhere in the state. But I'm also tracking the Washington Redistricting Commission, which is Washington's method for redrawing congressional and legislative district lines every 10 years, which is required by the Constitution to sort of balance those districts as populations grow and shrink in various places.
Presumably based on the results of the census, right?
That's correct.
So, could you describe to us the processes of gerrymandering and redistricting? Are they the same? If not, how are they different and where do they intersect?
So, redistricting is the process. Gerrymandering is a kind of pejorative word that's used to describe the way that the process is done in many places. And traditionally, the lines are drawn by state legislatures, which means that whichever party is in control, the state legislature has broad power to draw the lines to their advantage. That's actually where the word gerrymander comes from. There was a governor of Massachusetts in the 1800s who had a district drawn that was thought to favor his party that was so kind of wrapped around the state, kind of looked like a salamander. And so there was a famous editorial cartoon, which you can see actually in a recent recent edition of The Observer.
Yes, I saw that.
That practice is pretty common in a lot of states, especially in states that are controlled by Republicans now. And so there is a lot of redistricting going on as we speak in Republican-led states that is designed to give the Republicans the advantage in the congressional elections next year. However, I will say that that's not exclusive to Republicans.
Right.
The Oregonians have partisan redistricting, and their map, which was just released a week or so ago, is aggressively partisan and aggressively gerrymandered to favor their party.
And that would be the Democrats?
Yes.
Okay.
But that's not how we do it in Washington.
How do we do it in Washington?
In Washington, there's a bipartisan commission with four voting members. And a member is appointed by each of the caucuses of the state legislature. So there are two Democrats and two Republicans. And it takes three votes from that commission to send a map to the legislature for final approval. And the legislature doesn't really have much authority to change it once they get the map. And if the commission fails to come to agreement, then the Supreme Court writes the map. But that hasn't happened since the commission's been in existence.
And how long is that?
I believe we're on the third or fourth redistricting cycle under this system.
So 40-some years.
Long time.
How is this bipartisan process in Washington State? It seems fairly reasonable. How common is that?
There are several other states, I'm not sure how many, that use some kind of nonpartisan or bipartisan process. It's more common in Democratic states than in Republican states, which is a sort of a bone of contention among some Democratic activists,
sure,
because
yeah.
they feel, and I think correctly in a math sense, that they're surrendering an advantage.
Yeah. So, and I want to go beyond Washington State right now, if you're comfortable with that.
Sure. I don't have a lot of on the ground detail anywhere except Oregon, which I'm from Oregon, so I was interested in it, and I wrote up Oregon's most recent process as sort of an example of how gerrymandering works. So,
well, there's lots of news I'm sure you're aware of about redistricting in Republican-dominated states that is aimed directly at restricting voting rights. How does that work, if indeed it does?
So it's less about restricting voting rights than about disenfranchising certain populations. And there's two main ways that you do that via gerrymandering. One of them is called cracking, and the other one is called packing.
Cracking and packing.
And when you crack a community, what you do is you divide that community between districts so that its voters are swamped by voters of the other party. So, for example, in Oregon, they did this, and sometimes you do that for advantage. In Oregon, they did it by dividing the city of Portland, which has fewer than one district's worth of people, into three different districts, because the voters of Portland are quite progressive, and they, figure to swamp, more conservative voters elsewhere in those districts. So that's how the Democrats gained advantage. And that kind of thing goes on in Republican states. The other tactic is called packing. Which is essentially to take, let's say, for example, you're in a southern state with a large black population, and you're concerned as the controlling Republican Party in that state that you want to kind of limit the power of the black vote because it's typically Democratic. And so you would do that by concentrating as many black voters as possible into as few districts as possible.
Nasty. It's pretty nasty.
It's, it is a very hardball process when when it's done
well,
in that way.
I'm really curious about how this started and why is it legal? It sounds to me like these commissions are making decisions for the voters. And where do the voters come in this process?
Well, I mean, the process is controlled by the people who won the previous election for the most part. So, I mean, that's where the voters come in.
Yeah.
But it is typically, it is a partisan process. And, there are many historical instances of pretty significant abuse of that process. And there, there's case law, the Voting Rights Act at the federal level, and there are state laws that restrict gerrymandering. So, there's certain kinds of gerrymandering tactics that are essentially illegal now.
Wasn't the Voting Rights Act kind of gutted by the Supreme Court recently?
It was definitely weakened by the Supreme Court, but it did not get rid of what that mainly did, I believe, and I'm a little bit out on thin ice here.
Okay.
Journalist practicing law. What that mainly did was get rid of Justice Department review of maps ahead of their adoption.
Yes.
It did not get rid of the right to sue over the map, which still happens.
So presumably in those kinds of situations, then the redistricting process could be delayed in court for quite some time.
It does. Yes. There are frequently extended court fights.
So if we're looking at a 2022 election, is it conceivable that in some of those places, the court battles could extend beyond the election? And would that leave the districts as they started? Or
I believe there have been instances in the past where elections were conducted with the existing districts, but it's a thing that the courts tend to prioritize. So typically what winds up is that the courts write the maps.
Oh.
I mean, when there's a real, you know, when there's a real dispute. Intractable fight like that.
Well, can we use the Virginia redistricting process as an example? Because there seems to be a lot of national focus on that right now.
I have to confess that I haven't followed Virginia very much, but okay. We can certainly talk about it.
From what you know, what's the big deal?
I mean, again, I really have to, you know, to tell you that I just haven't followed it very much. I tend to focus pretty closely on, you know, on the stuff that my readers are interested to hear in Washington.
Okay, so let's talk about Washington, particularly Vashon Island, because you recently wrote an article in the Beachcomber that introduced to us the, I think it's a proposal, that Vashon be moved from the 34th district to the 26th district, which is the Kitsap Peninsula.
Yes, that, so there, again, we mentioned that there are four commissioners. One of those commissioners is a guy named Brady Walkinshaw, who represents the Senate Democratic Caucus. He used to be in the state legislature, and he ran unsuccessfully for Congress a few years ago when the 7th district was open. His proposal takes Vashon Island out of the 34th district and puts it into the a redrawn version of the 26th district. Now, the 26th district currently runs from Gig Harbor up north along the Kitsap Peninsula to take in part of Bremerton. And a big, you know, there's been a lot of noise in the process from folks in and around Bremerton that they'd like to be in one district. And so most of the maps achieve that in one way or another. So Walkinshaw's map would take Vashon Island and put it in that district and move it north out of Gig Harbor to take in all of Bremerton. That turns the 26th, which is currently a swing district, into a pretty solidly safe Democratic district, which is one of the reasons why they are proposing it, because Emily Randall, who's the first-term state senator in the 26th, is up for re-election next year and is widely regarded to be vulnerable. Both the House members in that district are Republicans, and one of them is gearing up to challenge her. So what that would... What Walkinshaw's map would do is it would move him out of that district because he's from Gig Harbor, and it would move, you know, Vashon Island and its several thousand largely Democratic voters into the 26th to make it more Democratic. Now, one of the other reasons that Walkinshaw is doing this is that the 34th is currently too large in terms of population, and that's because of the population growth in West Seattle. So if you've driven, you know, along Fauntleroy before the bridge, you know,
yeah,
back when you would drive along Fauntleroy,
you could. Yeah,
you know, you will see as you go through, you know, that area around the Whole Foods, you know, all those apartment buildings that have been built and all that infill housing along Fauntleroy, you know, those people have made the 34th too large, so it needs to lose geographic area somewhere. So you know, Vashon is one place that could happen. I talked to Brady about this, and, you know, he basically said, you know, I had to take something out of the 34th. And, you know, there's some demographic arguments to be made. The population density of Vashon Island is quite low compared to West Seattle and more similar to South Worth, or the area around South Worth.
Politically or demographically?
Demographically, just in the sense of, you know, population density, largely rural community, so on and so forth. And I think that there's, you know, the partisan political advantage from the Democrats' perspective is that you're basically taking the 34th is overwhelmingly Democratic.
Right.
You're taking some of its Democrats and putting them where they would, you know, politically be of quote unquote more use. So, yeah, I think that's the rationale. That doesn't appear in any of the other three maps. So I don't know that we can say that it's particularly likely to happen, but, you know, at this point, you never know.
Yeah, and if that were to happen, how would that affect our representation? Who would be our representative at that point?
So I think that if that were to happen as written in Waukesha's map, Randall would probably win, and so she would be our representative in the state Senate. And there would probably be two new House members in the 26th, because the current two House members would be excluded from the district, along with their, you know, bases of power in Gig Harbor. So it's not, you know, I would sort of depend on where exactly the line gets drawn, whether we wind up with some of the existing representation that's in and around Bremerton. But, you know, we'd have new people right now. Mm-hmm. And at this point, we're represented in the Senate by Joe Wynn, who's in his first term, and in the House by Eileen Cody, who's been in office for many years.
Right.
I believe she's the senior member of the House.
So we would lose Joe?
And Joe Fitzgibbon. And yes, we would not be represented by
all those people.
Either of those folks. Any of those folks.
Well, for some of us, including me, that would be a negative. The 26th district doesn't even include King County. So, and we, I presume, would stay in King County. It doesn't change that.
No, it doesn't change that. And one of the overarching rules governing redistricting is supposed to be that you're supposed to minimize the division of cities and counties. But of course, King County is very large, and so it's, you know, divided among many districts. And it's not unusual elsewhere in the state for districts to include more than one county. So that you're supposed to combine communities of interest, and there's a definition in the law about communities of interest, and one of the definitions is connected by a highway or a ferry. So that's, you know, in sort of, you know, one of the primary justifications there. And I think that, you know, that's probably pretty grating to a lot of Vashon residents.
Yeah,
because, of course, you know, many people, you know, if you're sitting on the North End ferry dock, you don't see a lot of people going to Southworth, except people who live in Southworth who are coming onto the island to work.
Right.
Whereas, you know, many people will go back and forth to West Seattle on a daily or near daily basis. So, you know, I think that, you know, folks are going to be resistant to that. I haven't actually tracked the response, but I would imagine the commission has heard from a great many Vashon Island residents.
Well, and how do we respond to the commission in case we don't know?
So there are several ways to comment publicly. There have been open meetings for public comment. Those are, I think, mostly over. The commission is due to issue its final maps in the middle of next month, so deadline's approaching. And then there, if you go to the redistricting commission's website, you know, there are ways to comment online and submit written testimony about various things.
Washington State Redistricting Commission, is that what
yes.
it would be? Okay,
yeah.
That's good. Folks, if you want to have something to say about in what district Vashon Island lands, that's the place to go, the Washington State Redistricting Commission. Look for them online. So how likely do you think it is that we would actually wind up in the 26th district?
I don't see why there would be a Republican vote to do that because of the Democratic partisan advantage that it would create. So I think it's relatively unlikely. That said, that there's kind of a lot of horse trading that goes on in this process, and it's possible that partisan advantage might be swapped for, you know, a Republican partisan advantage elsewhere in the state. And, you know, it's hard to know.
So
at some point, they're going to have to get that third vote.
Yeah. So with the how does that happen? With the 2-2, two Republicans, two Democrats on the commission, what happens if there's a tie vote?
In that case, if they can't come to agreement, it goes to the Supreme Court.
Ooh.
Which would theoretically write a map without sort of partisan interest based on the rules and the law. The interesting thing about this proposal that includes Vashon in the 26th is that that's the map that appears to be drawn with that outcome in mind. Aside from Vashon Island, Waukesha went to great lengths to minimize the number of county splits and the number of city splits. So you could view that map as a blueprint for the Supreme Court, should it ever wind up in the court's lap.
So that's the map the commission will be voting on?
No. They will come, the commission will eventually, the way the process is supposed to work, they will come up with some kind of compromise map, which will look different, probably, than any mm-hmm. of the four maps that currently exist. Although the differences may wind up being subtle. Because there's no new district this year, you would generally expect the changes to be pretty subtle. There's no new congressional district. When we did this process 10 years ago, Washington was getting an extra seat, the 10th seat, the 10th district, which is centered around Olympia. Then Representative Jay Inslee was about to run for governor, and so he was giving up the first district, and so the map was pretty significantly rewritten because of that. And if you're interested, that's an example of how the horse trading works.
Yeah. Yeah, so go with it.
The census in that year gave Washington another seat. So it had 10 seats instead of 9.
Population growth.
Right. The population growth was primarily in Democratic areas. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty obvious that the 10th seat was going to be a Democratic seat. So they created the 10th, which is built around Olympia, which is solidly Democratic. In fact, it was contested just this last election in 2020, and both of the two candidates in the general election were Democrats.
Uh-huh.
To do that, but as I mentioned, Inslee was leaving, so his first district got completely redrawn, and so that Bainbridge Island, where Inslee lived, was no longer in it, because, you know, obviously there's no incumbent to take care of. And that first district was designed as a swing seat, a competitive seat that the Republicans could win. And then elsewhere in the state, the 8th district, which is sort of the east part of King County stretching, was the eastern King County suburbs, got pushed over the mountains to include Chelan and I think Douglas counties. And that had the effect of making then Representative Dave Reichert safe until his retirement, because he'd face a couple of tough reelection bids.
Interesting.
And then the 3rd district, which had formerly included Olympia, got sort of pushed down and east a little bit, so that it's now based primarily around Clark County. And that made Representative Jamie Herrera Butler, who is a Republican, safe in that district. And so that was sort of the trade-off, in the sense that the Republicans got two safe districts where they had had two swing districts. The Democrats got the new district. And then the first was, you know, sort of designed as a toss-up. As it happened, the Democrats won that first election in mm-hmm. the first, and Representative Susan Del Bene has held it since. And then when Reichert retired, that was before the 2018 election, which was a wave year for Democrats, and Kim Schreier won the 8th. So Republicans didn't really get any advantage out of that redistricting process, but yeah, that was how it worked. That was what the deal was.
So in the last 10 years, I'm sure the population of Washington State has grown. And of course, West Seattle is one example of that. Where do you see it changing now statewide, other than possibly here on Vashon?
So if you're looking at congressional seats, the 7th district, which contains Vashon Island and Seattle, is going to get geographically smaller because the city has grown in population.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, probably means that the 7th loses, you know, some areas at the north end of the city and or the south end of the city, and just becomes more about the city. I think you'll see most of the maps kind of rejigger the areas where the districts 8 and 1 come together in the sort of northeast King County suburbs. The Democrats have both proposed making that first district seat much safer by moving it sort of, you know, closer to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Republican maps are there's two Republican maps. One of them is quite an aggressive sort of redrawing of this of the situation.
Surprise, surprise.
You know, I mean, they're behind, so they're you know, they're looking for advantages. In terms of, I think there's one possible change that Vashon Islanders should probably pay attention to, which is that both Democratic maps put the San Juan Islands and Anacortes into the same district as Whidbey Island.
What would that do?
That has the effect of reducing the number of representatives in the legislature who care about the ferry system.
Yeah, we want to be conscious.
I mean, essentially, you know, consolidates the 10th, which is the current 10th, which is Whidbey Island and Camino Island, is swing territory. It has a Republican senator and one Democratic and one Republican House member. The 40th, which includes Anacortes and the San Juan Islands, is solidly Democratic. All three of its members are Democrats. And, you know, they've sort of traditionally had kind of common cause about the ferry system.
Yeah.
And by consolidating those, you know, those places into one district, you know, there the ferry caucus, you know, and there's always been a ferry caucus, yes, of legislators who care about the ferry system, would be smaller.
And, you know, this conversation is fascinating to me, and it's something that the idea of redistricting and gerrymandering seems to have floated to the top of consciousness now, recently, where I don't remember it being a big topic of conversation over the last 10 years or so. Why do you suppose it's so top of mind right now?
I think it's top of mind right now because you have a pretty narrow advantage in Congress. The Democrats have the narrowest of advantage in the Senate.
You're saying state, or are you saying federal?
No, I'm talking at the federal level.
Federal level. Okay, go ahead.
Democrats have the narrowest possible advantage in the Senate, and it's 50-50, so the vice president has to break the tie.
Yeah.
The advantage in the House is not very large, and those redistricting processes really tend to favor the Republicans because there are more states that allow aggressive gerrymandering that are Republican controlled than there are Democratic controlled. And so it's sort of generally assumed that this process is going to, you know, produce more favorable, you know, a more favorable battlefield for the Republicans in the next election. And that's, you know, if you're Democrats, that's bad news because the midterm, you know, the first midterm election of a new president's term is typically a wave year for the other party.
Right.
And so if you have a wave year for the other party and an unfavorable, you know, more unfavorable maps, then, you know, that's not good. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why you saw, you know, that pretty aggressive gerrymandering that happened in Oregon recently, is that's one of the places where the Democrats can pick up a seat.
You want to hang on to it.
Because they get a new seat there. And the new seat was drawn pretty aggressively, you know, so that it can be won by a Democrat.
Paul Query, we have about 30 seconds left. And in that time, folks, we've been talking with Paul Query, editor and publisher of the New Washington Observer, online at washingtonobserver.substack.com. I highly recommend checking out his website and the Observer. Paul, all this aggressive gerrymandering that's going on, and a lot of it is in heavily Republican states, can you speculate as to the impact those changes are likely to have on our democracy overall?
I think that there's, you know, a possibility that the Republicans will succeed in gerrymandering aggressively in some places, and that they, you know, that will result in Republican control of the House for, you know, at least the next 2 years, and perhaps for longer than that. So
we're in for more struggles.
I don't want to handicap all those, you know, there's 435 of those elections, but but, you know, it certainly will make the midterms, you know, more challenging for Democrats.
Paul Query, thank you so much for joining us here on Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at lunch to chase after the truth with some curiosity and hopefully some intelligent questions. I'm not sure. I really appreciate the education that you gave us here today, Paul, on redistricting and the sort of ugly side of redistricting, which is called gerrymandering.
Thank you so much for having me, Susan.
Thank you for being here. And thank you, dear listener, for joining us.